job, everybody. All right. Today's verses, quite possibly some of the most relevant verses that were ever written. I don't get excited about getting up here, ever, because there's a lot of pressure. If I do something wrong, it's not just me I'm leading astray. I'm leading a whole lot of people astray. So when I tell you that I got excited about possibly doing this verse, it's kind of a big deal. Why? Because it points a big red finger at me. This is you. You need to wake up. You need to pay attention. And I think it wouldn't take much to internalize some portion of this for each and every one of us. So now the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, "Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it, for their evil has come up before me." Now if Jonah was two verses long, and that were the end of the book, by itself, that would be one of the scariest words ever written on the planet. I have to go to a city where they are not Hebrew, where they worship Ishtar, and tell them, "You're all sinning," and hope that they're going to receive that in a way that doesn't get me killed. Like any wise man, Jonah didn't buy into this. He turned and went in another direction. Specifically, he went to Tarshish. Tarshish, the exact location has been lost to antiquity. There have been some Phoenician writings that kind of hint towards Sardinia, western Mediterranean. Tarsus, Carthage are also on the list. The point, though, is that he was prepared to travel 3, possibly 10 times farther to get away from where he was supposed to be going than to actually just man up and do it. I believe in God, therefore I will go to Nineveh. Now, that wasn't what happened. He said, "No, absolutely not. You've lost your... All right, let's rethink this. Let's go in another direction altogether." So he's going to flee from the presence of the Lord. So Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. He went down to Joppa, found a ship going to Tarshish. He paid the fare and went down into it to go with them to Tarshish, away from the presence of the Lord, as if he was going to just say, "See you, guy. I'm out of here." No, that wasn't what was going to happen. And he knew it in his heart. So let me backtrack a little bit. If you got a second, go to Second Kings. 14:23. If you're in your Bible, go that direction. If you're going another way, go that way. So, some backstory on Jonah. In the 15th year of Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, began to reign in Samaria. He reigned 41 years, and he did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart from all the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. That's a different one. That's Jeroboam the first. He did not depart from all the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, which he made Israel to sin. He restored the border of Israel from Lebo Hamath as far as the sea from Arabah, according to the word of the Lord, the God of Israel, which he spake by his servant Jonah, the son of Amittai, the prophet, who was from Gath-Hepher. For the Lord saw that the affliction of Israel was very bitter, for there was none left, bond or free, and there was none to help Israel. But the Lord had not said that he would blot out the name of Israel from under heaven. So he saved them by the hand of Jeroboam, the son of Joash. Let's just take note of the fact that Jeroboam the second was just as evil as Jeroboam the first. And because God had said, "Well, I've decided to not destroy Israel, yet. I'm going to do good deeds. I'm going to make this happen. I will be done through these evil men. And it doesn't say, oh, and the godliest of men, Jonah. It just says he spoke through Jonah. Quite frankly, it was the only way he could speak through Jonah, because Jeroboam the first was the person who took over Israel. That's when Israel and the tribes broke up. Jeroboam the first received the 10 tribes in northern Samaria. Judah, from Jerusalem down, had nothing to do with this process. He was all by himself. And he goes and flees from Solomon, who at this time had not yet handed off power to his son and not yet passed, because Solomon realizes that this is a force to be reckoned with. He controls all of the forced labor, all the slaves in the land. He pushes Jeroboam away, and Jeroboam flees to Egypt. In Egypt, he comes back and takes over. A prophet tells him he's going to receive these tribes, and he is going to lead them. And all you have to do is do what I tell you. Be a godly man, unlike Solomon, who had received false gods. Jeroboam does exactly the opposite, as of course you would expect a man in his position to do. I don't know why. But he comes back and not only replaces, puts in place false gods, but he chooses the two calves, the two gods that were made by the children of Israel coming out of Egypt in the first go. These are your gods, he says. So you can almost see the writing on the wall for northern Israel, for Jonah's land, and for his kings. The writing on the wall is, you will not be here long. He was promised a kingdom that would last as certainly and as long as the house of David, so long as he did what he was told. And he didn't. He went another direction altogether. And by the time Jeroboam the second comes around, Jonah's king, the best you can say about him is that he merely sinned, that he didn't quite get rid of the gods that came before. Doesn't say he was a bad man, he just did evil. We know what the difference is. He didn't do what God told him to. And so now the man that he's speaking through, the one man of God, the one man that fears God, has been told, this is how I'm going to speak to the people. This is how I'm going to reach the Hebrews in my land. This is how I speak to the 10 tribes that I control. Now back to Jonah. Basically, at this point, he's been told to go into Nineveh, and he boards the ship going to Tarshish. Understand that Tarshish is a mining colony. There's no place for him there. So he has not merely decided to flee from the presence of the Lord. He has decided to abandon his life. He said, well, I just don't need this. This is too much. I am going to go away from the presence of the Lord. And I will never stop running, because Tarshish is just a stopping point. It's a place where he knows he can reach any other place. I'll just keep on trucking. No. It's not the way it was going to work out. But the Lord hurled a great wind upon the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea, so that the ship threatened to break up. Then the mariners were afraid, and each cried out to his God, and they hurled the cargo that was in the ship into the sea to lighten it for them. But Jonah had gone down into the inner part of the ship and had lain down and was fast asleep. Take note at this point in the story that once Jonah is mentioned, that's the last Hebrew person you're going to talk about. There are no other Hebrews mentioned in this story. Never let it be said that the Old Testament was strictly for the Jews, strictly for Judah, strictly for Israel, strictly for the Hebrew. Just isn't so. So the mariners were afraid. They're tossing stuff into the sea. They're doing whatever it is they do. To a man, I mean, to this day, naval personnel are suspicious, a peculiar lot. They will do whatever it takes by the numbers. It doesn't matter how unrealistic it is. But Jonah had gone down into the inner part and fell asleep. So the captain came and said to him, "What do you mean, you sleeper?" Just try to think of a really nasty word there. You don't understand what's at stake here. "Arise, call out to your God. Perhaps the God will give a thought to us that we may not perish." All lowercase g's here, everybody. No God involved from the perspective of these non-believers. Your God, the God, whatever it takes, let's just toss salt over our shoulders, whatever it's going to take, we've got to get this fixed. And they said to one another, "Come, let us cast lots, that we may know on whose account this evil has come upon us." They believed in that. They believed it. So they cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. Then they said to him, "Tell us on whose account this evil has come upon us. What is your occupation, and where do you come from, and what is your country, and what people are you from?" And he said to them, "I am a Hebrew." At this point, the story could have run. He could have kept on trucking. He could have tried. He could have believed that he was going to flee from the presence of the Lord, but he knew better. He was a believer. And like all of us, he just didn't want to go. And he was digging in hard. So he tells him that he's a Hebrew. "I fear the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land." Then the men were exceedingly afraid and said to him, This is that you have done. But the men knew that he was fleeing from the presence of the Lord, because he had told them. This guy does not play close to the vest. He cannot keep a secret to save his life. Then they said to him, "What shall we do to you that the sea may quiet down for us?" For the sea grew more and more tempestuous. He said to them, "Pick me up and hurl me into the sea, then the sea will quiet down for you. For I know it is because of me that this great tempest has come upon you." All right. At this point, they've had it laid out for them. This is how it's going to happen. This is what you've got to do. They still have their own rules, their own policies that they have to go by before they fall to that. They don't want to do that because they don't want to make him angry. This might not be right. This guy's not on his side after all. So let's think about this. So they row as hard as they humanly can. They try hard to get back to the land, but they could not, and the sea grew ever more tempestuous against them. Therefore, they called out to the Lord, "O Lord, let us not perish for this man's life, and lay not on us innocent blood, for you, O Lord, have done as it pleased you." Anybody? Does it look familiar? Somebody else's God, and they say, all right, fine. Just, I don't want any part of it. There's a couple of messages being delivered here. God is for the Hebrew. There is no other God for the Hebrew. That was the message for the Hebrew. For the external person, it was I am God, whether you like it or not. For the person who didn't believe, it was a repeated and never-ending delivery of a message to the people that didn't believe, you will know me as God. Maybe not today, someday. And there's no getting around it. So they picked up Jonah and hurled him into the sea, and the sea ceased from its raging. Magically, all these men feared the Lord exceedingly, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. All right, conversion. It happened like that, and next thing you know, you've got Bible-thumping believers. They are ready to go and spread the word. This is what happened. They made offerings to another God because this is a powerful God. There's no getting around what the story is trying to tell you. But the backstory matters. It matters significantly. I haven't even gotten to the interesting part of the story. Sure, it's fascinating. And the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. Does it matter, really, how Jonah got the message? He got the point? I, for one, think he got the point right there when he said, "All right, toss me into the sea. That's how this works." But 3 days, 3 nights later, he comes out of a fish, and I'm not going to trample too much on Keith's part of the story here, but the point is that he had already received the message. Now let's, for a moment, go back to the backstory. Backstory is significant here. He had simply been told to go to Nineveh. The Nineveh is one of the founding seat of Nimrod, quite frankly, for lack of a better word, a Babylonian, who is often considered the Antichrist, one of the first Antichrists. He is considered a man who believed in the ideals that his city was powerful, his kingdom was powerful, and by virtue of that, he was powerful. That was the extent of his belief system, and flew in the face of legalism versus freedom and belief in faith versus law. The culmination of these ideals are coming to a head in a very powerful city that's coming into its own. Nineveh is already strong and has been strong. It's a trading point. It sits across from what is modern-day Mosul. And the people, at that point, received a message from a Hebrew, a man of a king, and they took action. Whether or not what impact that had, I'll leave for later. But he had to go and deliver a message to a city which 6 or 7 generations from now is going to come back and destroy all of Samaria. Samaria was living in evil. They were worshiping false gods. They had built temples under the trees and on the hilltops. They had one in Dan and Bethel, I think. And the point was that they were going to continue worshiping these false idols and not doing as God had told Jeroboam the first to do, and they were going to pay for it. So almost immediately, the writing was on the wall for all of Samaria, and they were told that the cities would to crumble and they would be overturned and it wouldn't last very long, but they were going to receive these 10 tribes and David would continue on after dealing with some suffering because of Solomon's sins. Had Jonah not gone, had Jonah not delivered this message, the promise that Nineveh was going to be destroyed, hence injuring Syria's ability to come back and destroy Samaria, would never have occurred. It matters that God right now, right then, at that moment, is laying out the groundwork for what it was going to take to deliver on a promise that he had delivered 12 or 13 kings earlier. God is doing that now. God does it every day, every moment. The thing doesn't go away because I had a great day. I'm going to turn my back a little bit. There's a lot of ways in which you can pretend that they're not talking to you, that it doesn't mean you. It does mean you. It means all of us. And we have to continue to strive to seek out what God means for us in our life. It's not too far a stretch to say that if God is in these times trying to do these things, that we have to continue to do what is right in God's eyes, if not for our own personal salvation, for the salvation of those who come behind us, for the salvation of those we love, for the salvation of a country. It doesn't mean that the country, the name, the place will not be undone or remade or suffer. It merely means that we have to do what's right in the Lord's eyes for not our own sake. Because Jonah suffered. Jonah took it right on the chin and knew what he was doing was wrong. He also knew that this was He wasn't stupid. He was the son of a prophet. He had the education. He was the man that kings listened to. He was the man that kings used to deliver a message to believers. And he said, screw this, I want out. This is not for me. Well, he was made to see that God will not be denied. And we need to understand that. Because if we must continue on in a way that allows the people we love to be saved. Guys, that'd be it. I'd like to extend a word of prayer to, this is a request from Keith. I would like to extend a word of prayer for our country and the times we're going through. I'm going to offer a quick prayer and then a moment of silence. If anybody wants to say anything, feel free. These are troubling times we're going through. And stick to your guns. Have faith. Be strong. It'll have an effect. It'll have an impact on not just you, but everyone around you. His will be done. It'll be done from now until kingdom come. Dear God, please have mercy on us. The unworthy, continue to show us grace. Continually surprises me how much I have grown and how far I have come from that horrible, horrible person I used to be. It creeps up in all of us. That moment of doubt when you're standing there and you say, wow, is that me? Is that us? Am I continuing along this path? Is there grace? Dear God, I ask you to continue to show me grace and continue to show mercy to me. And by extension, this flock and our country. Please know that there are believers here who wish to do good. And even though it may take a ton of bricks sometimes, please know that we are here for you and your glory and your will. Dear God, thank you for allowing us to come together in your presence today. Please never let us forget that your presence is always there. Please never let us forget that we are here because of your presence. Please bless our children. Bless those that are coming behind us. Please bless the country and those that are in desperate and in dire straits at this moment. In Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen.